This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey everybody, David Shapiro here with a video. So today's video is going to be about longevity, longevity escape velocity, and more specifically, how we're going to live when we live forever. So welcome to Longevity Lifestyles. Now, before we get started, I need to give you a little bit of context. What are the assumptions that I'm making and what are the trends that I'm paying attention to? So first and foremost, the primary prediction is that panacea is coming. And there's three primary trends that I'm paying attention to when I make this assertion. First, AI drug discovery. If you watch my recent video about orphan drugs and the FDA approving the first AI-generated orphan drug for rare diseases, granted, it's not fully approved, but it is in phase two clinical trials. So basically, this is a sign of the ramp up to AI discovering all drugs for all diseases. Now, that's obviously a prediction. It's not guaranteed. It's not a foregone conclusion, but it is a step in the right direction. Number two is rejuvenation therapies. Some of the biggest universities in the world, Harvard, MIT, and a few others, have been releasing papers recently about whole body rejuvenation, cellular rejuvenation, chemical cocktails. And these are things that do not require genetic engineering. These are just medicines that can be taken sometimes orally, and in other cases via injection or other vectors of administration that create rejuvenation, basically a legitimate real-life fountain of youth. And this is not just on mouse models. Some of these are on human models, meaning that we are very, very close to having general-purpose medicines that, one, are cheap and easy and accessible, that also promise to move us closer to indefinite lifespan. And then finally, number three is using AI in the sensing, detection, prevention, and modeling of diseases. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so if you can detect and prevent the disease, you've probably seen some of the trends out there lately of AI being able to predict Alzheimer's several decades in advance, being able to calculate exactly like where the cancer is or what's wrong with your brain just by with a few drops of blood, that sort of stuff. So these three trends combined between AI drug discovery, rejuvenation therapies, and then finally the sensing, detection, prevention, and modeling of diseases, this is what I mean when I say panacea is coming, and AI is the medical panacea. Okay, so with that assumption, with those trends and extrapolations in mind, here's what I predict is going to happen to set the stage for longevity lifestyles. Number one, indefinite lifespan. We are ramping up to longevity escape velocity. Some people have asked me if we're already there, and I kind of think that we are, because when you look at the definition of longevity escape velocity, it is that for every year of life, you gain more than a year of life expectancy. Now, as some people have pointed out, right now, particularly because of the pandemic and depression and other reasons, life expectancy has not increased, as particularly for young people, and it's actually still going down. So technically, it might be a little while before we feel the effects, but with compounding returns and acceleration of AI, I suspect that within 5 to 10 years, we will definitely have really concrete data about longevity escape velocity. And honestly, within 10 years, I suspect everyone's going to be like, look back at this video and be like, wow, Dave, that was really quaint. This either aged really well, or I like completely, I like undersold and underpredicted how much it's going to be. So we'll see. Time will tell. Number two, post-labor economics. So this is something that I'm constantly talking about. Basically, as AI ramps up and it gets better at solving things like medical issues and disease prevention, that those improvements are going to be commensurate with other improvements, which are basically just going to invalidate the need for human labor. And so then part of the longevity lifestyles is going to be, let's combine longevity with post-labor and let's see how we're going to live. Number three, I think that hospitals are going to collapse. Most diseases, particularly in affluent industrialized nations, are age-related. I don't know about you, but from the time that I was born, the next time that I went to the hospital was in my 30s. So I went like more than 3 decades without going to the hospital. and if everyone is like locked into, a 22-year-old body or 25-year-old body, that level of health and vigor, most people might never need to go to the hospital except unless they get into like a car accident or to give birth. And because of that, I think that hospitals as a business model are just going to go away. And so I suspect that the few hospitals that remain are basically going to be government services, just because the margins are going to be too thin and it won't make sense. Now, what we might do is subsidize private industry because, we're in the free market theory. And so rather than the government providing the service, it might just be that the government writes a check so that the business is profitable. Not sure. Number four, and I think that if you look at Reddit and the subreddit r/suburbanhell, I think this is probably the best news for everyone, is that suburbs are going to collapse.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And so the reason is, as people live longer, we're going to have fewer children because what's the rush? We're going to have different lifestyles. But also with post-labor economics, suburbs are really optimized for being close to the city where the jobs are. But if you're not working in the city, then you don't need to be close to the city. You don't need to be within commuting distance. And also, they're optimized for single-family homes. And if you're not having children, you don't need to live in the suburbs. So I suspect that suburbs are going to go the way of the dinosaur, and we will look back maybe not so fondly on that period of American history and say, wow, suburbs were a terrible idea. I'm glad that died a quick death. Again, this might age poorly. We'll see. Okay, now that the stage has been set, let's talk about longevity lifestyles. All right, so number one, urban socialites. So urban socialites are the people that want to live in the cities and stay in the cities forever. Basically, imagine that you've got a 25-year-old body and you just want to live it up day in, day out. You want to go to concerts, you want to go to raves, you want to go to clubs. I remember I went out on a date with a woman and went dancing or whatever. I'm a terrible dancer, so didn't do that again. But, I went back to her place to, meet her roommate and stuff. And she's like, yeah, whatever. I'm not interested in anything, getting tied down because I'm young and hot. And I was just like, that is when I made this slide. I was like, that's who I was thinking of, was that girl and her roommate that were just like, we're young, we're living it up. We're going to enjoy the time while our, bodies are at our peak attractiveness and that sort of thing. So this is like fast-paced life. It's all about experiences. It's all about getting out there and meeting a lot of people. Now, I'm not saying that people are going to be urban socialites forever, but rather than just doing it in your 20s, you might be able to do it for several decades. Number two, rural hermits. So this is more my speed. I am a hobbit. These are people who just want to decamp to the countryside to, smoke their pipe weed and read books and eat good food, maybe have a garden and brew some ale, basically live like Bilbo or Frodo, their ideal life out in the countryside. Now there's a bunch of different ways. Obviously not everyone's going to, you know, wear a waistcoat and read old Victorian books. Some people might do it for spiritual reasons. Some people might do homesteading or whatever, but the idea is that proximity to nature, quiet peace and quiet, solitude, that sort of thing. Minimalism could be another reason that people want to decamp to the countryside. Number three, so a slightly alternative model for the countryside is social communes. So obviously urban life is not everyone's speed. That's not my speed. So this is probably closer to what I would want to do, where rather than grouping together for work, because that's why we cluster around cities right now, today at least. Some people cluster in cities for social reasons, but by and large, cities are there because they are a nexus, a hub of work, and also social hubs. But imagine that you want community life, but not in the urban, dense urban environment. America and a lot of other places have a lot of open space. And so because of the high cost of cities, I suspect that particularly as post-labor economics ramps up and people need stuff to do, I think that like small towns and, you know, like planned neighborhoods out in the countryside are just going to be a thing. So whether or not it's a full-on commune or at least just a small planned community that is very community-centric, I think that this is just going to be a thing. And I actually predict that like a lot of people are going to live like this, where it's just like, oh, hey, here's a little town. It's a cluster of 100 houses and everything is focused on creating community centers because people aren't going to be working. So you're going to be in your house, you're going to get bored, and we're just going to plan small towns and villages around social life. The next one, globetrotting adventures. So there's a lot of people who do this today and aspire to do this. So this is like what, you know, the influencer trend and a lot of YouTubers. There are so many people out there that like this is the life that they aspire to, where they just want to travel. They want to, you know, document their experiences. They want to become an influencer. They want to become a YouTuber or TikTok, as the young people use today, Instagram, that sort of thing. And so, but imagine that you're going to be young forever and you don't need to work because we have post-labor economics. You don't need a social media following to do this. You just go do it, and you do it for the sake of the adventure. From, you know, if you want to go, you know, climb every mountain, or you want to, you know, visit every city in Greece, or whatever it is that you want to do. You know, I have friends that have been to Vietnam, Cambodia, China. One of my friends back in the day, he just like gets a plane ticket, goes somewhere with no plan, and he ended up like on a fishing barge, like going up the river in Vietnam. And all he had to survive for like a week was a jar of peanut butter. I'm like, dude, you are insane. So I was thinking of him when I made this slide. But if you're young and healthy forever, why not? You know, and if you don't need to work, why not? Go for it. The next one, natal pods. So I actually came up with this idea when I was writing my novel about, you know, utopian future and dystopian future and all that sort of stuff. And I realized, if we have low birth rates and children need like a village, you know, the term is like it takes a village to raise a child. We don't really have that today, particularly in America. Some cultures do have like, you know, multi-generational homes. When I was growing up, our neighbors were a Hispanic family. And so there was like five generations living in one house. So like they brought the village with them. But we don't know how to do that. At least us white people don't know how to do that in America. So what I suspect is we're probably going to start doing it on purpose. And we actually already are. So there's what's called momunes right now, which is basically a bunch of single mothers get together and rent a big house so that they raise their families together. So just take that out to a logical conclusion where we do it more on purpose, but also because there's going to be fewer children. In order to get children living in a way that is more natural and healthy for them. Because again, if most people are putting off having children, you're going to need to deliberately create the environment where children will have friends to play with. Because you probably noticed today, at least I've noticed, that in many suburbs, like there might only be one house with children on the street. And that's not good for children. And so natal pods, the idea of deliberately creating that village. Eternal gamers. So, you know, my wife and I, one of the things that we do is we love playing video games together. A bunch of my friends, they're all gamers. That's actually like we have a Discord that one of the things that we do is just coordinate gaming, right? And so one thing that I suspect is that if you have post-labor economics and you have indefinite lifespan, you're like, there are going to be people that they're just going to live for the game, man. Like, especially with VR, AR, some people are expecting full dive VR. I've mentioned that before and I still have some reservations, but I'm coming around on like, you know what, if your physical life is taken care of, why not just go all out and treat your game life like a, you know, like it's a, almost like a second life. Or maybe it's your real life. Maybe it's more important. Now, obviously, movies like Ready Player One show that as kind of a dystopian outcome, which that's something to be mindful of, because if the company who makes the games and the VR controls your life, that's not good. But I don't think it's going to, I hope it doesn't turn out that way. Anyways, I do suspect that there are some people that like that nostalgia factor of like, you know, playing Halo all night with your buddies when you're like 12, we're going to have that. And some people are going to have that for the rest of eternity. And then the last one finally is Master Craftsman. So this is something that like, obviously you don't have to pick just one. You might be a Master Craftsman out in the countryside. You might be a Master Craftsman in a commune, whatever. But this is where, because one thing that people talk about is like, oh, well, if you lose your job and you're going to live forever, what do you do? Well, I mean, a lot of people have hobbies and talents and skills that they want to hone. Right. Like I know guys that they rebuild Mustangs, right? You know, they just go find a barn find of a Mustang, rebuild it, clean it up, you know, either sell it, keep it, or, you know, put it on show or whatever. And then they do it again. There are sculptors, there are writers. This is actually how my wife and I met. We're both writers. If we didn't have to work and we didn't have to worry about our health or anything, we would probably just write. We would like research history, write sci-fi, write high fantasy. And that would be like our shtick. That would be what we do. You know, in terms of challenging ourselves and stretching ourselves mentally. I might probably still do YouTube. I don't know. But we would see. So anyways, this is a set of potential longevity lifestyles to kind of get the gears turning in terms of how you might live in the future if you don't have to worry about getting old or sick and you don't have to worry about money. All right. So in conclusion, there are some potential problems with all this. Number one is gerontocracy. So if you're not familiar with the word gerontocracy, it means rule by the elderly. And if everyone lives forever, you know, there's no reason that like Supreme Court justices would ever retire. So basically, we're going to need universal term limits for all government offices, which we should have that anyways before people are living forever. But once people are living forever, we absolutely 100% need universal term limits. I think that's a pretty, that's like a no-brainer solution. So you know, whatever. Number two, wealth consolidation. So, you know, we have billionaires today. If people have forever to accumulate more wealth and power, then they're going to be trillionaires and then quadrillionaires. So, you know, and the more money you have, the easier it is to consolidate more power. So the solution to this, I think, is also pretty simple, which is more wealth taxes and more property taxes, which that's going to be necessary just to keep the economy going. Because if all the money ends up in the hands of like, you know, the top 10,000 wealthiest people on the planet, what's it doing just sitting there, right? One of the principles of neoliberalism is that money that's just sitting there isn't doing the world any good because it's stagnant. It's just static wealth that's sitting there doing nothing. So wealth taxes and property taxes to keep things in circulation, or, you know, there's other ways to incentivize that circulation, but wealth taxes and property taxes are a mechanistic way to force that. Number three is cultural stagnation. So in universities and academia, there is this this little quip that says science advances one funeral at a time. And that is because people often kind of get stuck in their ways. But this is partially, I think, biological, because there's this, this is not a real medical term, but it's called calcification. And so this is a popular thing in chess, because chess is super, it's intensely mentally rigorous, and you can tell when you lose your mental flexibility. I mentioned in a recent video that I've started feeling myself kind of calcifying, which it's really kind of sad, but like, you know, you hit your mental peak, you know, 25 to 35. So I'm just after like my mental peak and it's all downhill from here. And that really sucks. So what I'm hoping is that some of these rejuvenation therapies that we come up with also include mental rejuvenation. Because imagine that you're mentally and physically healthy and flexible for eternity. So maybe if rejuvenation therapies keep us all young, mentally and physically, we will avoid that cultural and scientific stagnation. Another problem is demographic collapse. So people are still divided on as to whether or not we're going to end up with overpopulation or underpopulation. One thing that I like to point out, though, is that all advanced nations are facing demographic collapse. And if people are going to live forever, then there's even less pressure on having children. So basically what I think is that's going to happen is that we're going to achieve population equilibrium because death rates are going to go down and birth rates are going to go down. So personally, I don't think it's going to be an issue, but we can incentivize population equilibrium with policies. Basically, if birth rates get too low, you hand out incentives like say, hey, if you have children, then you know we'll give you a nicer house or we'll give you a bigger stipend for a nicer house. This is something that some of the comments have said. It's like, oh, well, if you just incentivize people to have children, they're just going to keep having children, which that's the welfare queen myth, which wasn't really true in the first place. But you know, you can change policy based on what the population demographics are. Now, but the thing is if people are living a long time, you might actually want to disincentivize having children. So that might mean that you actually don't incentivize people having children at all. You don't give them any additional money to have children. Who knows? We'll see. And then finally, number five, regulatory capture, which is that governments and businesses collude to ensure that they have all the power and that they focus on wealth generation and profit reaping just for themselves. And basically, they focus entirely on wealth rather than this other dream that we all have. And so the current model of economics basically says the idea is that we should generate wealth at all costs. We should seek GDP growth. This growth-only mindset completely excludes quality of life and other metrics. And so basically, what we need to do is come up with a new common dream, a new common image for the future in order to work towards that. So to wrap up, here's my call to action for you. Number one, advocate for post-labor economics. I talk about it all the time on my channel. It is my jam. Basically, the tenets of post-labor economics is one, actively work to automate away human jobs. Let's get humans out of the workforce. Because why? None of us want to work menial jobs anyways, so let's get out of that. Let's just make that a deliberate policy goal. Number two, redistribute wealth. Obviously, if we're not working, we can't demand wealth from our labor anymore, so we're just going to need to redistribute it. And again, that's not like socialism or communism. That is just, it's going to be necessary through some mechanisms to keep the economy going. Because if we don't, then wealth is just going to pile up in the companies and the wealthy people, and the rest of us aren't going to have anything, and the economy stalls out. It's just not good. And then number three for post-labor economics, advocate for AI as a public good, which it kind of already is because most of the research driving AI is already open source. But as AI advances, we need to ensure that the government treats it more as a public good, and that's going to help drive us towards this post-labor economic model that I've presented. Number two, champion AI in business. Like I said, automate everything. This is one of the reasons that I consult with clients is I help them with adopting AI, learning about AI, investing in AI, that sort of thing. And so by championing AI in business, I'm helping drive them to that because like one of the specific things that I help my clients with is either headcount reduction, which is like, okay, how do you get people, how do you create tools that mean that you don't have to hire anyone else? Or that sort of thing. Now, that being said, most of my clients have told their employees like, hey, our goal is not to fire anyone, but you need to learn the AI tools. So that's where we're going right now. But in the long run, I think we should explicitly try and just get rid of human labor as much as possible. And finally, number three, vote accordingly. The conversation is still very much couched in, you know, old school capitalism and old school neoliberalism. So we need to start the conversation around post-labor economics. We need to find people who believe in it and people who will push this narrative. Then double down on AI and medicine and research. AI is the panacea. So remember, if you want this future, then we need more AI. We need it in research. We need it in healthcare. And victory is possible with a common dream, which is why we're here today. So thanks for watching. My question to you for the comments is, how will you live? Which of these models of longevity lifestyles resonates with you? And which ones did I miss? I want to know how you want to live, because I came up with these in a vacuum, but obviously this is just seven general boilerplate ideas. Tell me in the comments how you want to live. All right. Have a good one. Cheers.